You know, I haven't seen a USA chant in a while.
Thankfully, he's fighting what I imagine a 4th of July sale at Home Depot would look like if it's a person. Welcome back to Monday Night Fake Fights, where I, Garrick Taylor, she, they, am doing a rewatch of the Monday Night Wars and making it your problem. This week's esteemed victim is...
Hi, I'm Alex Steed.
Yes.
He, him. How are you?
I'm so good. Thank you for being here, Alex. I feel like, normally I'd be like, give yourself a little intro, but I feel like people should, you should need no introduction. You're Alex.
I have a podcast called You Are Good, a feelings podcast about movies. I have another podcast called The OC Again, that one I host with my great friend Nico Stratus. You Are Good, I host with Sarah Marshall. I produce a show for the performer Siri Dahl called First Thirst. And I produce live events. Like, that's kind of my whole thing.
Yeah, no, and you are awesome at it. And I feel like we've been mutuals on social media for a while now. And like, yes. Before I heard your show, my partner got into your show before I did. I always loved, I used to listen to You're Wrong About a lot.
So I
kind of came along the Sarah Marshall train and it was like, this Alex person is wonderful. Wait, I think we're following each other on Twitter.
Yeah, we've been following for a while. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm so happy to have you here. I was like, oh my gosh, I have podcast friends. I podcast now. Hey, podcast friends.
And I'm really excited. I mean, when I saw that you were doing this show, I got extremely excited. I'm really interested in like the newly emergent, not newly emergent, but like newly deeply pronounced like queerdo culture of wrestling.
Yeah,
is fascinating to me because I wasn't into wrestling at this time that we're talking about.
I was gonna
about.
Say that's my next question is what if any is your history with wrestling?
Yeah, I mean I was into in the way that you couldn't escape the culture without encountering like Hulk Hogan, Macho Man, Ric Flair, etc. Like they were obviously everywhere, like in the way that like Freddy Krueger and Pee Wee Herman were everywhere. Like there was like no escaping it.
Yeah.
They're very much that a part of the culture. But like the people I knew who were into wrestling were we just weren't in the same circles. And it was like hyper the irony of the hyper masculinity wasn't being picked up at this time. Like this is like before we even broke the fourth wall and like the sort of, you know, the Triple H times, like,
yeah.
So it was like still like highly literal and to be frank, like a little scary sometimes with the people who I knew who were hyper into it. But then I moved a couple years ago to the Bay Area and started going to Hood Slam, which I, as a sort of as a local promotion, I just started to refer to it as Queer Mass, because like once a month, just like the gaudiest, trashiest, gayest performance in all of Oakland would happen, and it would center around wrestling. And at this, and a little bit before that, like you, I think like in the lockdown time in particular, you know, these signifiers of simpler times felt comfortable. So it was a perfect story.
Well, and I had more time on my hands. We all did. So I could go back and be like, hey, there's 20 years of wrestling that I didn't watch. I can watch all the pay-per-views and see what I missed. And turns out girl, you know, and these things may be related. And then I got on.
Yeah, maybe this performance.
Is
related to some stuff.
Yeah, maybe I learned how to perform masculinity the way that these folks are performing masculinity. Maybe I read Josie Reisman's book where she lays that all the way out.
That to me is a Bible. That book is a Bible.
I call it required reading on this show, basically.
It's required. It's especially, I was saying this for a full year. I mean, I'm not saying it now, but I was enthusiastically saying it the first full year after I read it, which is, I was like, it is, you know, it's the, and she's written about this specifically, but it's the key book to understanding the culture of the political culture of this time, you know, as much as about McMahon, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And it, I mean, God, that's a good segue into Nitro. We'll get there. I wanted to say, though, because you talked about the excitement of talking about the queerness of wrestling, and I don't believe we got gold dust at all on this Raw. So I do want to make sure we talk a little bit about it, because, like, that's, oh my God, that's why you're here. And you mentioned Hood Slam. I found out one of my 5 to 6 horse people, as I call them, woo, came into the chat and was like, hey, we're talking about Goldust last week, replayed, Shawn Michaels did the Playgirl layout, do you remember that? And he had the belt, he had the belt over his junk, and then last week Goldust did it with the IC belt, and it was just unreal. And like, I mean, that was my first drag queen, like, it was Goldust. That was the first time and I didn't realize that was what it was until I was like, oh my God, no, he's doing drag. That's what's going on. But like, he really was. Like, that's what was great about Dustin. He really was just doing drag, and he got the assignment in a way that a cis boy from Texas, that's wild.
I was just in not just Austin, but like San Marcos and surrounding areas. And a lot of Texas still is like very much in the 1900s.
Yeah.
And there are few places, there are fewer places, and not so much in Austin anymore, because Austin's just like a tech city now.
Yeah. Keep it weird. Yeah.
Yeah. You really do see the drag element of performed, both like masculinity and heteronormativity in this place, in such a big, like, unironic, almost funny if it weren't so menacing way. So I'm not surprised that someone from Texas could meet the assignment, you know.
That's excellent. And we got one of the best people to do it, Dustin, to this day still working, one of the best ones. He just got even better on all this. I like to think it's because he went out there and got all the harassment he would have gotten if he was a gay man in drag. And it's just like, you get a laminated pass to the party. You know what I mean? Like, if you both, we've both gotten the F slur screamed at us in public. I feel like that brings us a little closer, you know? it makes sense. But to bring it around full circle, and this resurgence we're in of queerness, Hood Slam, Kid Bandit, who is this amazing non-binary wrestler, who does like anime shit. Oh my God, Kid Bandit. And Kid Bandit's having a resurgence. She was off for a while and they're back. But I guess apparently it was brought to my attention that they redid the Shawn Michaels thing with the Hood Slam belt.
Oh, great.
And I was just like, oh, that's fantastic. I'd like to hear it. So, yes, sure enough, wrestling has always been queer. It's just now we're unironic about it, and it's intentive. Like, it's intentional. Well,
there's the whole, I'm sure you must be familiar, but there's the whole, there are all these catchphrases at Hood Slam, and one of them is like, is an ironic, unironic yelling of, this is real. And I feel like that's like part of this reassessment of the past 25 years, is it's like, what truth was this speaking to in me?
Yes, absolutely, Alex. And like, that's, it's part of why I do this show, because it hit me so hard that I was like, I need to talk to people about this shit. Like, what the hell? And like, not just my therapist. The poor cat's named after a wrestler. Like, it's just terrible. I know, Moxley, you'll never forgive me. But no, it is, and it's important, and it says a lot about. And you can take that on that personal level and, like we said, blow it up to the macro level of what we're going out into now. And Nitro, let's go into it, I'm going to say. I'm going to say we start with Nitro, because we are in the episodes where that blurring of kayfabe that becomes Josie's neo-kayfabe is really, really taking off. Because Scott Hall's here. And that whole thing. And this happened before I was aware that wrestling was still happening on television. I was young enough that I thought it was this thing in the past that you can get on VHS, but doesn't happen anymore. And now it was like, wait, no, this is happening live on TV. So we start with our Nitro intro. It's Tony and Larry for hour one. These are certainly a couple of men in blazers, is what I would say.
In looking them up just to sort of like catch up a bit, like, yeah, was their signature look like, yeah, their look was like boxy blazer in either turtleneck or like high neck collar,
and like not even like a full turtle, yeah, high neck collar, like not quite a, like he didn't want to commit, yeah, to the turtleneck.
It was TNT formal, you know, good, yeah, for them.
Alex, I'm so happy that you are just right into what happens with me on the show, which is I'm going to talk about the fashion. I'm sorry.
It's all I could. It's certainly all I could notice. Also, like I know we're not at Cornette yet, but like, oh, also like just like Cornette's style at this time is like he's just like dressed like a rectangle all the time. I'm really excited.
It's like dish steel, but with pastels. It's like, oh my god. Yeah, I love it. But we'll get there, because what made me want to jump in is the talk of that blending. The boys show us last week where Scott Hall shows up again and gets slapped and talks about a big surprise. So we have that to look forward to. And I mean, I'm no writer, but I'm on the edge of my seat if I'm watching this in 1996.
I also just like, there is a Ramon character, problematic. Sure.
No, to say the least.
But there's... And I think Scott Hall as a lived person, yeah, problematic, but there is no one I think is hotter than Scott Hall.
It's a problem, Alex. It's a problem.
Nuts. Like when we open and he's there and they're sort of like doing like sort of like the promo setup or whatever for what's coming up, I was like, oh yes,
yeah, I remember now.
Scott Hall like 96 is like the hottest man on the planet. Have you ever seen that? Have you ever seen him on Jerry Springer? That one?
Yeah, yeah. Where he gave. Where, oh my god! Do you know the story about that?
Oh, I bawled. Yeah. No. Yeah. Can you? By the way, I'm sorry if we're going to try to go linearly because my brain is fucked in this direction. I'm already in Jerry Springer territory, but.
I'm going to do my best, but same, you know, so it happens. But no, I know the Jerry Springer you talk about. He went on there and he had this Intercontinental title belt and they had a pay-per-view the next day. And he gives the title away to a kid who had like cancer or something. It was like, oh man, yeah, I feel real bad. And then he gets off and he has to call Vince, be like, hey, make sure you got another belt in the town. What, did you lose it? I gave it away. I felt bad.
Like, as sort of to even boost the level of interest there, the kid had AIDS.
Oh, and that's what it was.
And he on television gave these kids hugs.
Good. That's amazing.
And if you just think about like the time and him and the people who are watching the show, like it was,
that's huge.
It's hugely touching. Like when you think, but I love that he was like, get me a new belt.
Get me a new belt. So good. Cause people have lost him, but I think it's the first time he's like, you're too cute with AIDS. And he's like, Vince was like, ah, yeah, you're right. Like, I can't even be mad at you for that one. You're right there. In the interest of trying to go linear though, we'll just talk about the first grabs of the night. We are eating well. Booker T in singles action and Scooter Pie. What I put here, Scott, I never liked a growth hormone I didn't love. Steiner, yeah. Human, bovine, fuck it. What makes hippos big? Gimme. whatever it takes. And, I mean, this match is great. I'm going to just say it's not one to miss, sickos. Watch it. It's as exquisite as you imagine being. It's two guys with big power moves. Booker T kicks real pretty, like, and most importantly, the energy they give, it really feels like they're trying to beat each other. And it's like a 6-minute match, but it really, really goes. Yeah. The only other notable spot I had, as far as that goes, I want to make sure I mention is there was this great spot where the two big dudes are doing a test of strength, you know, like sometimes they grab the fingers. But they did it with the arm hook, and Scott Steiner's trying to backslide him into a pin, and Booker's like really fighting it. And I was like, that's good old fashioned phony fisticuffs. So for that alone, folks, check it out. How did you feel about this opening match?
I was less like, so these are two characters. I mean, Booker T, I have like a little bit more history with, but like these are two characters that I like kind of had no investment in. And so I had to like go and sort of like check out who is who. I was more taken, and again, this just shows sort of like how bitchy I am and B, where my interests are. But, like, I was more taken by the fact that, is it like Mongo's wife who comes out to like, yes.
After this, yeah, after yeah, they yeah. finish up, Scott ends up winning it. After they finish up, Scott's breathlessly talking to Gene, and it's Mongo's wife, Deborah.
And it is acting. Like, it is.
Yes. Yes. She is. What's wild to me, Alex, is like, I knew her in the Fed later on. She gets way better.
Yeah, right, like, I'm glad to hear that.
She gets so much better. She's like real green here. The thing that floored me is that when she comes in, Scott Steiner bows out gracefully and says, "Wow, she looks real upset." You know, and I was like, "That was downright gentlemanly." I don't expect that from Scooter Pie Steiner. That's
it was actually surprising.
Yeah, it was actually that was a little heartfelt. You're freaking me out here. But yeah, she says that Mongo's very upset and about Ric Flair trying to make sex times happen with her on national television, and that makes sense. You know, while he's busy working. Yes. And you know, gosh golly, she's just worried he's gonna hurt someone real bad, and the crowd like goes. And I was like, you know, I was trying to be a boy at the time. I feel like this would have been emasculating, but the crowd seems to love it. So who knows? Obviously, I don't know. and sure enough, it seems like that's what they're going for, because when you get back on commentary, like Larry Zbysko tries to do that and say, yeah. like, oh, his wife has to fight for him. I was like, I don't think that's what was happening here at all. Like, at all.
I do feel like, I mean, I feel like just being reminded of like how much happens,
yeah,
like between matches and yeah. like sort of side, like between matches, promos, like who, like commentary about like a side B plot yeah. setting up something else. I don't know how commentators stayed like understanding what was happening. Like this, like watching a 2-hour Nitro really made me appreciate a 1-hour Raw.
Right. No, thank you. And I think that we're, as the show goes on, we're really going to get to the point where I think that an hour of wrestling television might be perfect.
It's like, so like, perfect.
Yeah, I'm right. I missed
by the time this is over, not again, yeah, by the time this is over, I'm like, okay, but like Raw ends in a cliffhanger. Like it ends yeah. in like a snappy cliffhanger. Like it's like it basically feels like it should be still going and then just freeze it and it's done.
Yeah, yeah, and it's all good. And it
works. I hate to give Vince any credit ever, but in this case, I think an hour is good. Yeah.
I do think an hour is good. And it's like, you know, that what this is a war, damn it, Alex. They're gonna get in a arms race, and this is the start of it. And yeah. because of it, we now have 3-hour Raws that I don't watch. I just do not watch.
It's too much.
It is way too much, but it's a good little in between bit. Kind of weird feminism. I'll take it. You know, like Deborah's trying to blame herself, and they're like, "No, no, no. Ric Flair is a piece of shit, and your husband is right to cause him bodily harm." And we move on to DDP versus Jim Powers. A wild jobber appears, and it's Jim fucking Powers. I don't know what to say about this guy other than imagine a professional wrestler in 1996 named Jim Powers. You got him.
That's it.
Yeah.
So, I felt this was unmemorable. Like, I can't remember.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
It's a lot of circling the ring. It's like 5 long minutes.
Yeah, it was like four minutes and 4 long seconds, according to my notes. But yes, but it's I do want to give it a couple of notable things, because on this show we are tracking the evolution of Diamond Dallas Page into his final form, and the Great Yogi is out for a romp. He does like 4 minutes on heel wrestling. It's like an insult comic. Technically, he's there for a different job. He spends the whole time fucking with the crowd, like it's beautiful. But he ends it with his diamond cutter, and Tony calls it a diamond cutter for the first time.
Ooh.
Yep. So I have to make sure to let everyone know at home. If you have the advent calendar, you can mark off that bit. I'm one step closer to his final form. That's I should absolutely sell those in the merch shop.
You absolutely should.
But yeah, then we get to more exposition corner with Mean Gene, and this is really cool because he's in the locker room, which is unusual. And you get Conan, who's the U.S. champ, and he's talking shit on El Gato in English and Spanish. And I like this. I wish people would do this more, personally. And it's just, I love the luchas in WCW. We didn't get to see him fight, but I'm happy that they're still represented. Unfortunately, it's one of those things where I regret to inform Conan in real life, true asshole of a human being. Loving his early work on Nitro, though. You know?
I believe it.
That's the nature of the beast here, is that you can't, don't meet your heroes.
Totally. Yeah, sometimes it does not pay off.
Yeah, but I mean, this Nitro continues to cook along. We get Sting versus Meng, and I looked at my notes here and said it's a 3-minute match. I was like, no shit. Because the first 3-4 minutes or 4 matches of this show are all, they're really good. It cooks. It feels like they're trying to keep the energy up. And by the end of it, these are two really great guys, Sting and Meng. Yep. It rhymes. This has banger qualities, but in the end, it feels like a squash with extra steps, and that's really weird. So, I try to give people a watch it or skip it at the end of every match. This one, your mileage may vary.
It's one of these things where it's like, the, again, like, as a person who appreciates this as a whole but isn't necessarily granular, I think the one benefit, even though Sting notoriously I don't know, it's hard to like Sting
for it's hard reasons. It's hard to like. It's hard to like this Sting specifically.
Totally, but he's cool. He's cool to look at. That's like the thing that I enjoyed. I like looking at him. He looks menacing.
It's important that he doesn't talk into the microphone. But yes, he looks very menacing.
And the thing that, do you run into this too, where it's like, you know, all of these people's like personal histories, so you're like, I'm watching them in 96 and I'm like, enjoy it, guys. Randy, Miss Elizabeth, and Sting, enjoy this time, because y'all are in for a world of pain. Like, it's just so, or, and then Chris Benoit later in the,
Chris Benoit of it all is
rough. Just watching all of this and being like, holy shit, you guys are, some of you are going to make it out, and some of you, it's rough.
Hi, hello. This is Garrick from the future. Editor's note, Alex was in Miami at a porn convention, like Alex's do. Went to a flea market and saw a vintage Sting action figure. A small aside on my aside here, this vintage Sting action figure is post-WWE acquisition. Fuck me, I'm old. Anyways, he realized he got this wrong 2 weeks ago. All of this, he was thinking about Lex Luger, Macho Man, and Elizabeth, which made sense. And I was, I feel like I was about to correct him at the time, and then he said Benoit, and I just got sad. and we tangent like we do on this show. So anyways, Alex wanted to make sure I got it in there, because no beef with Sting. We love our Stinger. But I still say that this era of Sting is hard. I stamp on my words on that. Love Sting, but God. Liminal Sting. Anyways, back to the show. It really is. I love doing this show because of that, because it's wonderful to have hindsight. Wonderful to watch this stuff as a grown-up. And all that, but yeah, every once in a while, anytime that like a couple weeks back, someone made a joke alluding about Lex Luger hooking up with Ms. Elizabeth, and I went,
oh my God, just like, speaking of difficult to very, very few redeeming qualities, the all of these. I'm sure in some of these episodes, you're like, oh, this ends tragically for everybody. Like,
yeah. I've had to turn it into a weird fun where when I get people on who don't know anything about wrestling, I get, they'll be like, oh, wow, I really like this person. I'd be like, you're sitting down? Okay. Sometimes it's so much fun.
Yeah, some of these episodes are like watching the first half of fuck, what's that wrestling movie I really loved that came out a couple years ago? About the Texas brothers.
Oh, Iron Claw.
Yeah. Some of these episodes is just like real life Iron Claw.
Yeah, absolutely. Which, oh god, real life Iron Claw. We'll get there. Those guys will show up eventually. But yeah, this is it really is. And speaking of the Miss Elizabeth of it all, Deborah goes into the back to try to talk to Flair. Gene hooks her up with Bobby, who is like, okay, close enough. Just to get into this, because I guess it's going to make sense later. They throw her into the locker room. She instantly starts screaming. And like you just said, knowing the full stories, I'm just like sick to my stomach here. Knowing the Ric Flair of it all. Yeah. I'm just like, this reads so differently. And then they quickly kick her out. And yay. But there it gets washed down by an example of a suspension of disbelief that we like to embrace in this fake sport, because Ric Flair puts a figure four on Renegade in a backstage fist fight, and I just the internet has ruined my brain. So the first thing I think of is that gif of Andy Daly from Comedy Bang Bang, like the 555, come on. Like you're gonna be in a bar fight, like Let me twist it. Let me do a spinning toe hold here. And like, no, it's not happening.
Yeah, absolutely not.
But yes, that was a little weird. Nitro keeps cooking though with these quick matches, because it's Jim Duggan and Squire David Taylor. They want to end the first hour with some good 1776 heat. We got some blue bloods.
I was just gonna say, we had a, you know, I haven't seen a USA chant in a while, so that was good to be.
Yeah, you gotta replenish those batteries. Yeah,
I was glad to hear.
Thankfully, he's fighting what I imagine a 4th of July sale at Home Depot would look like if it's a person. it's Jim Duggan. And like this guy, I mean, there's not much to say about Jim Duggan. He's what you see is what you get. This thing lasts all of 2 minutes. It ends with Duggan hitting him with his roll of penis tape. There you go. You know, the only noticeable thing of this whole thing for me was at one point, Dave Taylor is like trying to do some character work with the crowd and like some crowd work. And he just, I don't know if it's genius or lazy, he just starts quoting Churchill angrily at the crowd. I'm gonna fight him in the air and the sea. And I was like, what are you talking about? I'm not even convinced that man's British. If I was a more professional podcaster, I would look it up, but it's very strange. On the way to commercial though, they give us speaking of our luchas, they do a promo for the pay-per-view coming up, Patreon for folks who want to be around for that watch party. And it's a montage of Dean Malenko kicking ass and Rey Mysterio Jr. kicking ass in Mexico. And I did a happy dance because this is the start to, like, how did I put this? It's the Monday Night Fake Fights version of edging until we record the bash. Because the program between these two is so good.
I feel like you probably generate like a good merch option every 10 minutes on the show.
Oh god, no. You know, if I was a more professional, sure. The last one we did was Rack Me Bro, which actually made me laugh very hard. Yeah, that's good stuff. But yeah, I'm excited for that. And yeah, Nitro's cooking. It's very strange. I guess it's good because it's an hour and a half, like half with commercials cut out. And it's like, I still, like we said, I Alex, I think an hour is right. I think an hour is right.
It gives it a little more, like, by the end of this, I'm like, okay, who fought? Like, you see so many faces, and they're all, like, you know, 3 to 5 minute matches, and added up, you're like, okay, a lot just happened. But, I mean, I could see that being, like, again, to put this in context, and I'm sure you've done this a bunch of times on the show, it's like, you know, by the time I got out of bed, watched like 40 reels. And so in 96 or 97, like, this is all the content you're watching in a day. Like, you get home, you know, you probably like watch whatever, the news, you like flip around or whatever, and then you put this on, and this is just all the media you're consuming.
Yeah, like maybe you had some radio during the day, depending on your job, or like...
An hour and a half must have been like a blessing, because you're just getting more like moving pictures doing things, which is nice.
Sitting your ass down for 2 hours, like, like you couldn't even hate the commercials, because it's just, you're done, you know, like that's...
You're sitting down, I'm watching this, I'm eating one of those like gallon cartons of Goldfish.
Getting crazy. Oh, let's fucking go. I don't even care that Mean Gene's on the screen talking to Jimmy Hart, and I look at Jimmy Hart. What the fuck is a Jimmy Hart? I don't care. I got Goldfish.
Yeah, I don't care. What is your take on Jimmy Hart overall?
My take on Jimmy Hart overall. I think that Jimmy Hart, oh God, you know how they have those stories of like the Appalachian like cave goblins? Yes. You know that? I feel like he's the Memphis version of that. He's a tulpa of Memphis good old boy wrestling was like, we need a manager. And he just sprung up and is perfect. He annoys me and he's perfect.
I love him. I think I'm enchanted by him. Anytime he's on screen doing anything, I'm like, I'm here for what Jimmy Hart's doing. It's so, like, as speaking of drag, it's like, what does he do? He's like Little Richard.
Like Paul Bearer later. I can do non-linear too, Alex. But no, it's the weird little dudes in wrestling. He's WCW's perfect weird little dude. Yeah. And some listeners will be like, you don't love Jimmy Hart. I'm like, no. I love to hate Jimmy Hart.
Oh, sure.
That counts. Because in wrestling, that means he's doing good.
if it inspires a strong feeling that stays moderately consistent over time, like your goal.
You're winning. Yeah, you're drawing, pal. You know, that's Vince likes that. So, no, my thought on Jimmy Hart is he's one of a kind. He's legendary for a reason. I love to hate him. I think he's absolutely ridiculous, but he's ridiculous in a camp way. The airbrushing of, like, he used to just go to like, Goodwills and stuff in whatever town they land in, find a suit that matched him, and then airbrush whoever he was managing that night onto it. And, like, that became his whole fucking thing. And, like, he is still riding that, Al.
Oh, good.
Commitment to the bit. Go for it. Like,
it's
I'm fine with it.
Well, and it's also, like, you need, I mean, this is, like, speaking of Paul Bearer, like, if you have a wrestler whose whole thing is they lack affect, like, you need someone to have affect on their behalf.
Absolutely.
And that's, like, often what you get with, I don't know who decided giants are, like, kind of, like, mute or without affect, or, like, with a very specific affect, but, like, yeah, you need someone to be, like, the toady on their behalf.
Well, I'm gonna tell you right now why this specific giant, because it pisses me off, Alex. But yes, you are so right. Good transition. It's like you're some sort of podcaster or something. But no, Jimmy Hart, right? Yeah, I'm familiar with the concept. But yeah, Jimmy Hart is that for the giant, because the giant is green. He's like 27, 28 at this point. He's younger. He won't surprise you. He played basketball. He was this big, tall guy. He had the same thing as Andre, the same thing that caused Andre the Giant to grow. But he had his taken out when he had the tumor taken out when he was 27. So he stopped growing. Okay. Andre kept going until it eventually killed him. But like all anyone could see is like, well, you're Andre the Giant's kid. That's what we're going with. And what sucks about that, though, is he's actually an athlete. And the reason that Andre was near the end there, this big lumbering kind of guy, and the reason he had that affect is because he was French and didn't speak very good English for a promo. He needed Bobby Heenan to talk for him. And he was in constant pain. That's why he walked like that, is because he was in a lot of pain at that point. When you see matches of younger Andre the Giant wrestling in Japan, he looks a lot more like Paul White, and he's moving a lot. Sure. It blew my mind. Like, Andre could work. It was really something. But people fell in love with that lumbering thing. So you have the Giant show up in Paul White with in this stuff in WCW, and he wants to do more. And when he first got there, they were letting him. They're like, just go do your thing. And he was doing more athletic stuff. He would get on the top rope and fly. He did it like twice. Mm. And it's really, and it's like, you don't see that. And then he got the belt because he's the champion here, right? Mm-hmm. When they put the belt on him, they're like, no, 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 you Giant, you Gurr, you Ah.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't let him do anything else. So he comes out here and he does that to Scott Norton. And it, again, it's a squash match in with extra steps. It's under 2 minutes. Does not Scott Norton, God love him, he tried. He tries to get some offense in, but he gets choke slammed on the outside, and that's it. But you know, it's unfortunate that they did. I refer to it as what they have done to the Giant, because he used to be really cool. Yeah. And then this happened, and I love that you noticed it. Like, you're like, why are they all like that? I'm like, because it worked for Andre, and they decided that that's what a Giant has to be now.
Yeah, which is weird. I mean, yeah, at some point they were like, Giants, I don't know if it's like, with regard to like how the paradigm was set, all of that like makes total sense. And I don't know if there's any additional where they're like, well, the fear is in the stature and like, we don't need to hear the talking. But like, I don't know. I would love to hear a talkative Giant.
A talkative Giant would be great. And like, we could have had that, the things we could have had. And sometimes you get it. But not in the WWF. You won't have a talkative Giant. Vince likes his Giants large and not white, if he can help it, because like, it's even more exotic and racist and gives people chances to do that. You know,
Vince McMahon.
Yeah, that guy. No,
I don't believe it.
There were signs. Yeah. So, but yeah, no, good call. That's solid stuff. But yeah, this match, it's a squash. He kills him. He kills him dead. That's all you have to know. Kills him dead. Feel free to skip it, sickos. Luger does come out to try to kick his ass, though. And Giant does not want to use his big boy words. He just, Luger! And it works. I kind of love this bullshit. Next, though, this is really sweet, and this is wild, Alex, because this is the shortest match of the night, but so much happens.
Yeah, was it even a minute?
57 seconds, literally. Good call. Lord Steven Regal, the greatest villain to ever do it, and he's fighting like a super baby jobber Billy Kidman. And it was like, oh, it's Nitro debut of this little guy. He looks like he's 12. He's going to go on to have a pretty sweet career. But this guy is a master of heel. We have a great episode for heel work, basically. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, though, it's 57 seconds. It's too fast paced. He don't get time to play it too much. A lot of wild shit happens. It ends with Regal doing some nasty business. It's almost a lion tamer style Boston crab. Folks will know what that means. With a boot on the guy's head. Like, he's just got a boot on his head, like an extra fuck you. But yeah, this was a squash and a half, but it was a squash where like 7 to 8 huge spots happened. You know what I mean? Like, the fast pacedness of it was breakneck speed. To that point, I wrote down one notable spot here. Kidman goes for a 450 splash. So he does like a full front flip and just lands on his knees. You can see he lands on his knees, but the way he snaps his head back and sells it, it looks like he like bounces. And holy shit, that was so great. When he does that, Eric says, after there's a brain buster. And Eric's like, oh God, he landed on his head, Bobby. Like, that's okay. I was like, oh God damn it. Bobby was on fire tonight. But yeah, no, it was quick. It was painless. Well, for some of us, it looks like it hurt. Might've hurt Kidman a little. And, apparently though, while Hot Dog Boyfriend Lex was running out in that previous match, Golden Retriever Puppy Boyfriend Sting was in the back taking notes. And he's like, I see Lex do. I do. He runs out like right at the end of this to get his receipt on Regal. And he does, in fact, backfist the shit out of him in the middle of the ring. Regal, he sells it like he's been sullied, like his beautiful face, and the crowd's like, all right, let's go. America, woo. The USA chants again.
Yeah.
But this feels... Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say the olden times.
Yeah, that better time? No, not better times. I do not want to return. No. But I was going to say, this marks the end of the holy shit, this is a lot of Nitro really fast. Yeah. I feel like, and because we get two more matches and they're both pretty more laid back.
Yeah, it's like these last two matches take up the last half hour. Like it feels like it was like a like breakneck hour and a half, and then the last two matches have like a lot of breathing room.
It's weird. I appreciate it. I like my wrestling with more breathing room. It was kind of like just wow. I was just kind of like we're flying through this, but I was like, well, they flew through it. This is only like the third episode that they've done the 2 hours, so I feel like they're still kind of just figuring it out.
Yeah, figuring out basics.
They've been doing a lot of video vignettes that I would rather they not. yeah, there's a lot of like minute and a half, 2 minutes of Hulk Hogan grunting at people to American Made that I just don't need to see again. And that's fine. Yeah.
But I speaking also like of- don't like what was. So I didn't pay much attention. I mean, I didn't pay much attention to wrestling at this time at all. But I, as a person who wasn't paying attention, I did not fully know about the Monday Night Wars. Like, I didn't know that we were sort of establishing sort of a whole other sort of alternative property to then WWF, now WWE. And then, like, I just couldn't. It was like very, as a person who wasn't paying close attention, but these people were very, I was still aware of them. Like it was very strange to have no context for like why Hulk Hogan suddenly had a new personality. Yeah. Or like why, like Randy Savage more or less just stayed Randy Savage, although he was just wearing black. Like that was the difference. But like
for the most part, yeah, he was wearing black and he was beating up different people. That's it.
But like there was something about like, I think like was Hulk Hogan's look that like he had just the darkest on earth 5 o'clock shadow and a bleach blonde mustache. Like there was like, it was so strange to, it was like, if like suddenly, like, again, as these characters who were always around, it was like, if like suddenly like Freddy Krueger was wearing a tank top, you're like, when did this happen? Like when, or like Elvira has now like her, a bob. You're like, what, like, what is happening?
You're the Santa and the Easter Bunny switched color. Yeah, tablets, you know, like this is wrong. You're like,
exactly. And it's what I've enjoyed in going back to all this is like making sense of all of it and like being like, oh, okay. There was like a rationale for this. Like there was all this stuff going on in the background. Like Ted Turner's trying to make as much money as possible, like all of these things are happening. But that's what I've enjoyed most about going back, is going like, there was a rationale to all of this.
Yeah, there really was. Even if, you know, the we've been breaking it down over 41 episodes now, and the more we do, the more I go back to what we figured out in like the first or second episode, which is that this entire war is about the fact that Hulk dumped Vince and don't, he's not mad about it at all. He doesn't miss him at all. Don't tell anyone. I'm not going to make sketches about how awful Ted Turner is because I don't miss Hulk. I'm not going to like make fun of him for being old because I don't miss him. You can't tell me I miss him. Fuck you. I don't miss him. And like, that's the whole thing, is that Hulk left and Vince was like, now what do I do? But then Hulk got to WCW and was like, well, now what do I do, brother? Like, I don't, I need a big guy to slam. It's the only thing I know. Yeah. Me and Vince made money one way.
And I need a container. Like Hulk, yeah. Like Hulk Hogan isn't out there like imagining how to be featured. He just needs to be featured.
Yeah, he's not that smart. Yeah, he's not that good at this. Like he's
that whole, I mean, goddamn, just as I've always threatened starting my podcast Psychosexuality Today, where we'd look at the news through this lens. But just this whole goddamn, and again, like seeing how it applies to modern politics, like Vince's whole thing of taking in these sons. Yeah. And him being a son that was taken in by a guy who precedes him and taking in these sons and using them up until they are not usable anymore and then not missing them at all or throwing them under the bus or like doing whatever.
Yeah.
For decades is so brutal.
It's so fucked up. The worst I can think of is Bret Hart.
Oh my god, that breaks the Bret Hart breaks my heart.
Bret Hart of it all is, I mean, that's we've just started to touch on some of that here. Folks, spoilers.
it's tragic.
It gets brutal.
Those hearts, another god. There's more than one wrestler in your family. Someone's gonna die, and the rest of the story is gonna be deeply upsetting. Yeah.
Holy shit. No, so I loved Iron Claw. I would love for someone to do the hearts, to do Calgary, Alberta, Iron Claw.
Well, like, that's where I became because I know the histories. I don't necessarily know them in real time. And when I became insufferable to everyone around me was being like, oh, that's just one family. Like every wrestling family has a, maybe not as almost, who biblical, death count. As
smiting, like God was mad at you for that Nazi gimmick.
Yeah. But there's always, if there's three wrestlers of note in a family, one of them will die tragically. Like how it goes.
Basically. And I mean, the only time I can think of so far, fingers crossed that hasn't happened, is the Rhodes. Dusty got to live a good life where he got all of his flowers and got to train kids until the end of his days. And both of his sons are successes. Like his one son just finished a year-long reign as the champion holding a belt that he never got. Like if I was him, I'd be happy.
I'm so glad that a guy who looked like Dusty Rhodes,
that's what I'm saying,
fucking A, did it, and then B, made it through to the end. Like
in spite of Vince fucking with him at every corner. At every corner, he just got to live his best life, even though he looked like that. Yeah, absolutely.
It's so good. Love him.
Fucking A. We should finish out Nitro here.
I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay. We're doing the things. I told you, it wasn't just you. That being said, there's not much to say about this one, folks. It's the Public Enemy versus the Nasty Boys again. And this is just Nasty Boys versus Cultural Appropriation Nasty Boys. They're the same team. It's just one of them has... are Italian guys with box braids. Like, that's it. This is not a great match. I'm going to say skip it because we've watched it so many times already. There's not anything notable. They brawl. Y'all know what happened. That's it. Agreed. So, yeah, right? We come back for our main event, though, and this one's a lot more fun. It's Flair and Arn. They were supposed to fight Renegade and his buddy Joe Gomez, but they sent him to the hospital in the back.
And, I kind of love this era of Flair in that, like, he looks like the senior manager of a Chili's all the time, like, and he just like took his shirt off to like wrestle with you. Like he looks like your dad, like that friend that has a scumbag dad. Like he looks like that dad.
We've seen him fight in khakis, Alex. I've seen him do it.
Like, what was happening? in the like Ric Flair style department in the mid 90s?
I have an answer for that one. Tonnages of cocaine.
This is also right when Metallica cuts their hair off. Like this is like the time when if you had like a feathery whatever that was, like you cut it into whatever this is. Like this is this was a very interesting cultural time for hair.
Yes, he's not the worst to do it, but this is a weird cultural hair for Ric Flair. He's got a very he is a dickhead, and he kind of looks like a dickhead. He'll say not complimentary. There's complimentary, not complimentary.
He's someone I have such a complicated relationship. I'm sure we all do, but like he's like I love his character so much, and I know that he is his character, and that's
the problem.
Hard because you're. Yeah. I'm like I hate him.
Yes.
I love the character. He in is context. The. It's like deciphering the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. It's like who is what.
The Holy Trinity of Ric Flair. Yeah,
I don't approve of anything he did, including maybe laying the groundwork for his son dying young. But the
shit. You know, we've. Oh, thank you, Alex. We've barely touched on that. We'll get there.
he's such a. I mean, but he's such a tragic and charismatic figure that it's like, what do you even do? I mean, he to me is like the signifier of the entire art form, right? Is that it's like something extremely entertaining to watch, something extremely entertaining to engage in, someone who's extraordinarily talented and deeply unlikable in large part because of the system that they went through. Anyway, sorry, we haven't even gotten to the fight.
Oh my God, no, no, don't apologize for your art. This is it. This is what the show is. That is such an amazing point. Like, I could not have said it better. Like, he is I think that's why I'm so fascinated with him, too. I hate, because it's one of those things where it's like, I hate him. I hate him so much. But also, he's Ric fucking Flair. And you gotta love what, in context, it would be so great. Like, in case of this match, he walks out looking fucking amazing in that like pink, he's pink flowery get up, and I love it. And
he looks like a dyke too, which is great.
Yeah, absolutely. And with, especially when you put him with Liz and Woman, and like Liz is in like a little black leather, like polyester dress, and like
maybe that band.
Oh my God. I'm like, yes, no, this is, I could see y'all at the gay 90s. Let's go.
You know what some merch should be is you should have a picture of the three of them together and have it be the Slits, like as the band.
Yes, yes. Holy shit. All right. I'm going to write that down when I'm editing. Well done, Alex. Fuck. All right. Excellent. You congrats. You have joined the ranks of guests who have made merch happen.
Oh, thank you.
That is too good. You and Erica can just fight about it. Yeah. I predict that this is going to be one of those matches where it's cookie cutter, but the cookies fuck hard. So I'm all right. And like, kind of as I predicted, like it's 18 minutes of these guys just getting their shit in.
Yeah.
But those guys are Arn Anderson, Ric Flair, Sting, and Lex Luger. So their shit is really awesome.
Yeah, it's like it's fun to watch. It's like cool to watch. Like you're like, what's gonna happen? They're all like, they're all difficult people who look great.
Absolutely, difficult people look great. It's like, no, it's like, yeah, it's like if Dawson's Creek had more fighting. Like, yeah, it's difficult people that look amazing.
Absolutely. I mean,
what was that old Mad TV bit? Pretty people with problems. That's
Totally.
But this match is, I'm going to say watch it, even though, like, folks, you've probably seen it already. I don't care. It it's one of those things. If you've seen these guys fight, you've seen this match, but it's still so good. Watch it. It's good. Lex is having a good time, and you can tell because he's not making his usual Lex noise when he gets hit. This time he's locked in. He's like, no, I'm having a good time. I got my boyfriend here, Sting. We're gonna win. And yeah, it's fantastic. But also 18 minutes. I was like, I'm having a great time. This is sports entertaining. I'm having a wonderful time. Obviously, they must fuck this with a clusterfuck of an ending. And sure enough, Giant just shows up and like doesn't even touch anyone, and the ref's like, fuck it. Call it. We're done. Let's get out of here. I'm being told we need to get out of here. There's not much to it. Scott Steiner comes out with a chair, and all the baby faces try to slay the Giant, but eventually little Jimmy Hart, nipping at their heels, gets him out of there and does the right thing. And yeah, that's it for Graps for Nitro. And there was a lot of Graps, a lot of short Graps. But now, going home, we get the what's going to kind of be the new thing here. And I love it, though, is it's like, what's the new NWO drop? You know, they don't even have the name yet, but what's Scott going to do? We get back to the boys in the booth to send us out. Bobby is angry because he is terrified that Macho Man's going to kick his ass at Bash, Great American Bash. Honestly, it's amazing because he spent months talking shit about Randy this whole time. So now, like, in these 2 weeks leading up, he's been getting, like, increasingly desperate. Like, please don't kick my ass. I love it. I miss Bobby Heenan every day. But sure enough, Scott comes out. He has turned in his Denim Dan outfit. Now he's a Leather Daddy, and that's fine with me. The last two weeks, the oh my God, the Canadian vested tuxedo was very weird. But he comes out to do the harassment with his big surprise. Bischoff says he doesn't want trouble, but also he wants to point out that you threatened me with surprise. Where is it? Well, he turns around and there's Kevin Nash in all black, buddy. There's Big Daddy Diesel there, Big Daddy Cool. And I did kind of love, you mentioned the war of it all. Last week, Vince said, hey, we heard that Razor Ramon and Diesel are over at the other company and pretending that they still work with us, and they do not work with us. Diesel hadn't come out yet, so that was them doing corporate subterfuge. He gave away the big surprise, and I just noticed that, like, as I was watching this, I was like, wait a minute, he gave away the surprise last week. Unfortunately, it didn't work. They still beat him. The last thing to say about this, though, you ever have a moment where, like, you're on, all the lights are on you, like, everyone's been waiting to hear what you're going to say, and you just totally fuck it up?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Well, Kevin Nash has become a meme forever, because he grabs the mic, and he's like, we've been watching you run your mouth for 6 months. This is where the big boys play. Look at the adjective, play. We're not here to play. and he is never going to live that down.
Amazing.
Yeah, if you'd said verb, that would have been a real hard line, but he didn't, did he? So that's
that's so good.
But yeah, that's some television. They show up and they tell them, like, we're here, yeah, just like we told you, and you find your three guys because we might show up for a fight. And Eric's like, all right, I'll get a fight for the Bash. And I'm guessing that I'm going to look it up before we record the show proper, but I'm guessing that this pay-per-view sold well. Because yeah. Holy hell. But that's it. Do you have any final thoughts on Nitro, Alex?
No, I mean, this is certainly the first. I think that this is like the first full Nitro I've sat with in a while. Yeah. And it was, yeah, again, it's like, I know about it. I just watched the, like, long Ted Turner documentary. So, like, I also know a bit about, like, in addition to from Josie's books, and I've read pretty much every seriously written wrestling book that is, like, on the market. So, like, I've even read, there was, like, a bad one I read that was, like, just stats. Like, it's like just, it was like, they, and once I find it, I'll let you know so we can talk shit about it. But
I was going to say, send me a link, but I'm pretty sure I know the one you're talking
about. Yeah. I was like, is this just stats in narrative form? But the, I it was good to see these guys at these times and the women at these times, but it was, I was more just interested in experiencing the artifact of Nitro and remembering sort of like what's going on in television history at this point, because there's like a lot happening.
Yeah. And I'm so happy. That's a lot of why I love doing this show. And like, the show has changed format a little bit. We're going through more of that. Stay tuned, folks. That we're switching things up a little bit coming up here. Nitro is too. I figured we're catching up, right? But it is that, because some people see it for that. Some wrestling fans see it, like, you have the sickos like me who just love every minute aspect of all this, and I'm fascinated by the war aspect of it, by those things I pointed out, the subterfuge, by the capitalist, like corporate bullshit and fighting that they were doing on top of this entertainment as well. And I love this stuff, and I love having a lot of different types of guests on, because like we're about to get into Raw, but just on Nitro, you've noticed stuff I wouldn't have noticed. So I appreciate you.
And I mean, if you think about also just like the history of selling stuff in America, especially in the later half of the century, are battles between brands. And so, you know, you have the Cola Wars in the decade prior, like Tupac's going to die 3 months after this airs, and like a huge, you know, which represents sort of like a coastal battle between rappers. We're now seeing that again with the Drake bloodbath.
You can't even call that a war.
Totally. But it's like
there is a well-deserved massacre.
There is this absolutely, but there is this element of, you know, there's the thing that you're selling and then the format through which you're selling it, and you know, creating teams for consumers is like a really big thing. It's like a really big part of selling stuff. And so we're kind of seeing that as much as we're seeing these matches, which is fascinating to me.
Absolutely. And what I love about this show is tracking all that and seeing kind of what happens when you win.
I'm just getting there now, yes. Well, she wasn't at that lovely community kitchen I tracked her to, but the food was really amazing. We really should tell listeners to visit opencollective.org/communitykitchenmpls. They can make tax-deductible donations to keep those folks going. But besides the point, I'm telling you, she has to be here. I mean, you saw the viral video. That barista dropped that guy with a DDT and then puffed her chest out and strutted like a coked-out cockerel. It has to be her. Yes, ma'am. And a like, subscribe, and review to you as well. I'll report back when I have her.
Fucking tackled that fucking guy. It was so fucking cool. Oh, hi. Welcome to Badger Brews. What can I get started for you?
Well, actually, I was hoping to ask you about... You know what? Yeah, I'll have a grande red eye with a shot of Irish cream and hazelnut. Thank you.
Vince wins, and then what happens? He has to invent a second brand in order to compete with himself because everyone lost interest because the war was over. And it's like it's that victory of what does the dog do when it catches the car? You know, yes. what now? And it turned into like 20 years of a monopoly where the product kind of sucked. For like, it had its ups and downs. You know, your Summer of Punk was cool because you had a guy who came in and tried to shake it up and tried to get rid of that hegemony. And like, now we have, like you said, the return of this in ways, but in the 90s, it really was. Everything was a battle. Everyone was looking for a war to fight, especially in capitalism and branding. Absolutely. And they played into that. And it's funny because it's almost like culture was catching up to what wrestling was always about to a certain extent. But especially what Vince McMahon Jr.'s wrestling is about specifically. Sure. They used to be a lot more union. There was a union of bosses, but not workers. The NWA. Right. Funny how that worked. The bosses got together. It's like, we can work together to make more money, not the. but it's all cyclical. We're getting, and now AEW is back, and we don't have that monopoly anymore. We get the option, and it's really great. And to kind of bring it back to where we started, too, it's gay, it's queer. AEW, we just last week, Toni Storm, the women's world champion, ended her promo by going out on the balcony overlooking Atlantic City and yelling, "I'm here and I'm queer and I am timeless." This is a woman who's pretending that she is like a old time silent movie actress. They hail her as coming from Warner Lot 7. Like, you know, like that's. You should.
I have to finally get into AEW because everything I hear, to get back onto the historical aspects.
I wrote here on the intro, how's that weird 90s rock theme treating you? Because you're talking about the nostalgia of it. Wow. Nope, just an emulation. Well, that's what Joe Johnston
and I was like, do I know what this is, or is this just an emulation of things?
You asked me, too, about Jimmy Hart earlier. One thing I forgot to mention that I love is that he did a lot of the theme music. He was a musician. He had hit songs with, like, real groups. And so DDP comes out, and he has his theme song is called Self High Five. When you listen to it, you're like, God, that sounds like Smells Like Teen Spirit. That's on purpose.
I was like, I know these riffs for sure.
And George Johnston does the same.
They were in the ether 4 years ago. Vince came to
him with a song he liked and said, "Give me something like this for the Raw intro," and that's what we got. Needless to say, we're here. It's Raw. Lawler starts tonight showing Ultimate Warrior's painting that he did. The ridiculousness
that this is what I was missing in Nitro is I'm like Lawler. Okay, guys, Lawler draws a picture of the Ultimate Warrior, and he says out loud,
he believes it too, Alex. He believes
that,
really
that market value $100,000.
Again, when I say carny shit, I don't mean that like derogatorily. Like wrestling has good stuff. But that is totally it.
Lawler also looks like a soft Minecraft he's so character. Terrible. Like he's and like again, he looks so funny. I love him so monsters. Much. He's such but a dick.
When he's on, it's he's perfect. On, and I actually totally love this bit because it allowed Vince to be like do the like yes, ain't that nice? You know, like yeah, I'll put that right on the fridge, the one in my office that holds my special growing medicine. Yeah.
Lawler. Okay, so Lawler in this episode has a Chekhov's gun in the shape of a $100,000 portrait of the Ultimate Warrior. Handcrafted.
We're good.
Ultimate Warrior.
It is like does the mini like, he does the Mickey Mouse. Is like we're gonna need that for later. I'm gonna set that aside.
It's so funny. And that's kind of, this is, watching these side by side was actually helpful because, like, again, not to give, none of this is to give Vince credit, but the fact that we have existing on television at least 15 years of lore at this point makes their ability to be, like, self-referential and referential of existing stuff or whatever. Because, like, in Nitro, I mean, you've noticed, and I don't know how this works with AEW now. Yeah, I call it exposition corner. But in Nitro, they're, like, they're laying down mythology in real time. And
for the most part.
Yeah, for sure. And in this, you're like, I know all these guys. I know, like, what their beef is. I know, like, what their character is and stuff. And so just to settle into it was like a little easier obviously because it's like I know it's like why some people will go to McDonald's even though they know it's McDonald's Raw, it's like it like feels good you know like it's I know what I'm getting
whereas Nitro does exposition with Gene they do it by showing replays and having Vince and Lawler just tell you what happened.
Well, right, and they have a like I was listening to I'm so bad with names. The director of Sinners, he was talking about Coogler. Yeah, he was talking about when he made Black Panther, and he was talking about how like Marvel has all of their IP up for recall, like computerized. So like if you're like, I want every issue in appearance of Black Panther, they'll like press a button, print it out like in a beautiful bound thing, and you can have it and you can work with it or whatever. Yep. It's like that's what this property has, is it's like their exposition is pulling from their archive. And so you're like able to see it in real time. They have the existing narrative around it. Like it's just, they just have the luxury of it being more seamless because they've been doing it for a long time.
It's an older company, but they're new to what Vince has been doing, which is narrative. Right, totally. on a wider national scale. They've been doing it territorially where they don't have to work that hard because it's a small territory. Everyone literally knows it's the one thing on TV, you know? So like they're not sure yet how to do that. Like, yeah, great. You have great eye for that. It's awesome how it works. Cause like, again, in case of point, this first match, we got Owen Hart and Yoko. Everyone knows who Owen Hart and Yokozuna are at this point. Like, by the end of this match, Yokozuna's talking mm-hmm. about how he feels like he's having a rough time and he's like, you know, might be getting out of it and stuff like that. This is like the end of Yokozuna's career. JR, it was Jim Ross, wasn't it? Yeah.
I like who interviews him. Is it Jim? What is it? JR interviews him. He's like, I love JR so much. He's like, you must be pretty despondent. And then he says this, he basically is like at the end. And then I think it's like Vince in commentary is like, he is pretty despondent.
Exactly. No. And I will say this is, it's bad, but it's
like funny the writing is hilarious. It's so funny.
Vince is earnest. He does all of this in earnest. He does because
he reads like a guy who lost $1 million on an evil Knievel
speaking promotion. Of good like, folks, Owen and Yoko, I say watch it. It's a quick one, but like it's Owen and Yoko. I'm not gonna say much about it. big guy fall down, go boom.
Okay. Yeah, they talk a bunch stuff. Of shit about it's size in the thing, but it's a good match.
Oh Jesus, which can't be true. I mean, maybe
they keep saying that Yoko's 666 pounds. I was like, good job, guys.
Yeah, they wanted to. They went there. In between that match and the next one, though, there's a live show promo, this poor kid. This is very like video design is my passion level of how this guy did this, but this kid's wearing like Cerebro headset. Yeah. Oh my God. I don't even understand. And I was like, all right, this is weird. And then we go the whiplash from that. We come back to Jake, the Snake telling us in gruesome detail about how he parties too hard.
I was like, I honest to God thought, like, you know, because we watched this on like some tube service or whatever, and I honestly thought I accidentally hit the like click forward button and it did like related videos, because Jake the Snake is talking about, he says at some point, okay, Jake the Snake says he feels bad about the position he put his wife in, because at least at one point she had to reach into his mouth and pull vomit out of his throat. While you're watching this, like with your kids,
this is what happens. And like when Jake someone the Snake is like, human soul,
I like OD'd in front of my wife. Tries
to write like humanist stories. Like he's trying to like bring some humanity to this character. He's like, say some fucked up shit.
He says, I hate literally, it. She had to dig. I wrote it down. She had to dig the vomit out of my mouth.
Yeah.
Did you also catch? Did you catch the line? I mean, this is such a niche reference about what was going on at the time, but did you catch the line when Lawler says of Yoko's outfit, I wonder how many kids in Kathy Lee's South American sweatshop it took to make the robe for Yoko? Kathy Lee got in trouble this time, like around this time. Because she had a line of clothes that was exposed to be like made in like extraordinary sweatshop position like conditions, and so it was like so Letterman piled on her a lot for that, and then Vince responds to Lawler by being like, it sounds like you jumped on the Letterman bandwagon, because like, Letterman sort of made jokes about it forever. I'm old, and so I can't wait to rewatch some of these to catch their references, and just do like a ghost newsletter of references from Raw 96.
And this week, here's Alex with what the fuck Vince was talking about. Yes, there you go. Our 1996 correspondent.
Yeah, to Alex translate Speed. What was
But yeah, in the meantime, Jake had a problem, and Vince is like, trauma? Sounds like a storyline, pal. We're gonna we're gonna go with it. Ay, ay, ay. And then we get Mark Merrow versus Skip, but I just call him Chris Candido because, like, that's his name, man. And that's what everyone, that he was more famous as Chris Candido. This is one, kids, this reeks of banger. For the sickos playing along at home, watch this one, because, like, this is, Mark Merrow has given us some of the best matches of our podcast experience so far. He just did it in WCW as a different character, Johnny B. Bad. However, like, he is so good, and Chris Candido is the younger dude here. He grew up a fan, and, like, he is so, so good. And he had this run in the Fed, and it's really, I think he is really underutilized, underappreciated. He kind of is one of the things, he came in with Sonny because they were dating, and Vince was like, I want hot blonde. I guess you here too, you know? And then, like, I don't know what to do with you, but I got your hot blonde. So, and it's funny because the same thing happened to Mark Merrow. He shows up at, having just left WCW with his wife, Rena, who we now know as Sable. And he's just like, oh my God, look, hot blonde. Wait, you wrestle? Okay, sure, sure, fine. Yeah, like, we're paying for the package. And
is this who Jake was referring to when he said, it was in this match, right? Where he says, literally, I think Sonny wants to sleep with the winner. And then they call him out, like, Lawler calls him out on it, is like, what the fuck, basically.
Yes, well, and then Jake says
she needs to pledge allegiance to one flag, not
Vince McMahon and Vince Russo have never had a consensual friendship, let alone relationship with a woman. Like, don't understand how their brain do work. And they just see woman fuck whoever have power. This is why I have power. So their whole thing for Sonny is whoever has the tag team belts is who she goes to manage.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So she dumped her boyfriend when he lost the belt and went to the pig farmers, and then dumped the pig farmers to go with the smoking guns. And whoever the smoking guns lose to, she'll go there. And this is all she gets. Like, this is her whole fucking thing. It's awful. Yeah. Yes. No. And then they go in on the
Vince says of her and this tendency.
Like, that I don't have much to say about this match. Don't skip it is my one thing. And everything else I have to say about this match, in my under a section in my notes labeled Chuckle Fucks, where I talk about anything noticeable that Jerry and Vince said. Yeah. They start going in on the Clintons, and they, when I was a kid, I did not get this, but this was all the time, Alex. All the time. They would say stuff and my dad would be like, what the fuck? You know, like, you can't just say that. Yeah. Like, you know, and they're on USA. They don't care. That's part of the fun of the show is showing people, like, this was on television, you know.
Nope.
Wild shit. So, long story short, folks paying attention at home, because this is a King of the Ring match, damn it.
Totally.
Merrow, or who puts it? Merrow wins this one. Oh, God, I didn't even put it down. This is how much I cared about this one. Merrow wins, Skip loses, Merrow goes on. And next week we get Owen and Merrow, and if that doesn't cook, I will eat Jared the King's crown. I feel weird because I was like, they show us the updated bracket, and it's working for me in the way that I was like, is this what March Madness is like for normals? Because they showed it, like, all the matches coming up, and I was like, oh, yeah, this is, it's working, okay, like, this is weird, Raw is good, this is strange, I'm having a great time watching Raw, this is really strange. And then they ruin it, because we come back from commercial, and there is a vignette with Jerry the King. This was going to replace the Whale of My Nightmares. Jerry not allowed within 800 feet of a school in the city of Memphis, the King Lawler. Lording it up with two small, starving children. Yes. It was, like, a fever dream.
Other,
I took note.
There were other icons. He's like lording it up in a castle. This was a fever dream.
He gives a dog a whole turkey leg, which is not good for dogs, folks. That's very bad. He's doing it. Yeah, they splinter. It's not good. Thank you. I'm happy you know this. He's doing it all bare-chested in a crowded
splinter.
And in this moment, I just want to ask you, is this the first time you regret coming on the pod yet?
Yeah. I was, again, this was one of those things where it's like, this is not a thing I have seen before, but it's so of the time. Yes, they had a Sega Saturn. It's so of the fabric of the time. Is this also presented by Sega Saturn?
It gets me every time, Alex. It warms my little millennial heart to hear that little roach go Sega. What a
time
capsule. But thankfully, King chokes on his bone, and he ends up in heaven in a ring in the clouds. Yeah, and then proceeds to get his ass rocked by what I believe you were correct, historic other kings. Now, I paused and tried to catch them all. So, kings I recognized. We got Elvis. We got Don King. We got King Kong. Yes, it's just a dude in a gorilla costume. It rules. A mummy that I'm guessing is King Tut. Another pharaoh of some kind. I believe King David. And I think it was played by Barry Horowitz. Sure. And that feels fucked up. Because it's Vince McMahon, I think that's what they're going for. Holy shit, there was a lot of kings. But yeah, they did that. We come back and I just wrote Vince, Lawler, and Warrior. This is a whole quick little segment where Vince is like, all right, we have to do something with Warrior because he's still on contract. I made a mistake. He'll be gone soon. Remember Chekhov's picture. So we have to do the thing. And good old Warrior, if he was about anything, it was about putting in the least amount of effort possible with the most energy possible.
This is from PDR Wrestling, yes. But you must check that. I assume you're familiar with this website, but it has recaps of all of these.
Yes.
And he says Vince McMahon introduces the Ultimate Warrior. That's what I'm big saying. Reaction for him. Why is he wearing that ball cap? It takes away like 75% of his mystique.
In a hat, and it's like kind of in Warrior-ish shape, and then also full
he's just
gear.
Wearing a hat.
He couldn't decide. Do I want street clothes? Do I want full gimmick? I don't know. He's been here for 3 months, and I'm ready for him to go back to parts unknown.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
It's so funny, just like the idea. I mean, I know the whole history with the Warrior and the contracts and all that stuff, but like, just like you look at Jerry Lawler and you look at the Ultimate Warrior and you're like, well, we don't know who's gonna win. Jerry Lawler like looks like a janitor, and like exactly. The Ultimate Warrior looks like a killing machine. It's fun watching.
Like, no, I'm just trying to believe it, but this is rough. He tries to sway Warrior with his painting, fresh off Vince's roid fridge. Warrior says, nah, yeah. Unfortunately, I must kill you. Yes.
He does say, though, in a very weird, polite turn, I can appreciate the time that was put into it. But you're the biggest con artist. Yeah, he's like, I can appreciate. It's so funny. He's like gonna. He's basically like all of his body language is like, you know, he's gonna turn it down. He ultimately calls.
Yeah, but it's totally that you got him there. You know, it's totally true.
And then he's like,
and then sure enough, we this nothing burger of a segment reaches its inevitable end when the painting is shattered over Warrior, who no sells it and acts like nothing happened.
Yeah.
You called it. You're not even on the show every week and you called it.
Who could have seen it coming?
Yeah, right. I am so right. I'm just happy this segment's over because like I tried to find good bits, but these are three men for which I like wish the eternity of hellfire and flesh rending, wasting our time in a ring. So I was like, I have enough. I hate all three of these guys on a deep personal level. I'm done with this. Like, I can take it in small amounts, but when they're all there together, I'm just like, this is too much. So sure enough, we get now British Bulldog, who I love dearly. Unfortunately, it's another one where it's like, I know you're a monster, but I love you. And the Nazi Lich, I mean, the Undertaker. The first thing I write down for this endeavor, I can't help it. Diana Hart Smith looks so good again. That outfit, the white dress, like, I want it. I'm simple bitch. It's so cute. And friend of the pod Piper is going to get mad at me because she does every time I say Diana Hart could get it. But Diana Hart,
absolutely.
I have a problem, okay? Like, it's an issue, I know. But they come out and they got, like, his whole Jim Cornette's there again looking pastel and de steel and foxy. And yeah. Unfortunately, he hops on the commentary. But then the light goes out. And the crowd loses its collective shit. I know when I was a kid, this worked on me. How what are your feelings, re Undertaker? Yeah.
As oh, I mean, I, like I mean, I know, I, you know, I know who and how he is, obviously, as a human being, but like I even then as a person who like did not care about wrestling itself, like I remember like playing some WWF Super Nintendo game, and I'd always pick him. Like he's like, I think like all of these people are obvious archetypes, and yeah. So even if you are not into it, like you get the archetypes, but like he is like the archetype. Like he is cool, I think, just like looks wise cool as hell. Like yeah. You turn the lights off, he's massive. I think this is the time that he looks best.
Yeah,
he's
basically
got the campiest routine, because he's got this like little fag with
when he's my Undertaker, and I was like, oh, you little own him, hag friend going on here,
and like, and like yes, totally, and like it's I think it's remarkable, and like I think like again like the lights go out, there's like ceremony, like it's not just like you like play a song. Yeah. It's like I find this like one of the most convincing cores of an act and a character and an enduring character and a person who again like regardless yeah, right. I mean it's not surprising to know that someone involved with this industry has a deplorable series of views or whatever, but is also seemingly within the industry yeah. among like a many of the people they would with him, call him is the, like kind of like an older leader, like elder statesman sort of respected person, and yes exactly yeah. Like I'm stripping aside everything known, like I'm for it. Like yeah. When I see this stuff happen, I'm like, yeah, this is like my yes. shit. Like I was no, like see, in 1996, I was like really into Marilyn Manson. So like this is like
to my partner earlier. I'm 1/16th goth. I think I've always been like I've just always had a little bit in there.
Yeah. Oh, same. I was like, I'm not going to commit aesthetically because I don't believe in buying accoutrement, but like, I've always been spiritually goth. Like from the minute I knew it was an option.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I'm wearing like a pink shirt with strawberries or something on it right now. So like, it's like almost the antithesis, but it is like my shit. Like this is my shit.
Still work for me. The wrestling does not anymore. That's one thing I will admit to me. I don't his matches as much now as a grown up. Some of them are great, but this is the thing. This is what I'll give Undertaker. His best matches are in relation to who he's fighting.
Exactly.
Yes.
Like he is exactly Ben, like he's sort of almost like the ultimate straight man, even though the thing is so camp. Yeah, totally. But like he like, you know, like he against like Mankind or something, like something where his presence allows for the other person just to kind of do all of the stuff that they're doing.
His wrestling as like its own thing. Like I'm not excited about an Undertaker match just because it's an Undertaker match. I'm excited about an Undertaker versus Mankind match because I know that Mankind's going to get some really good shit out of him. And our Undertaker and Shawn Michaels had two of the greatest WrestleMania matches back to back. 2 years in a row. They just ran it back and just did it again. And like, and it was unreal and good. Because like, if
yeah,
exactly. Who doesn't feel pain?
Well, he's, I mean, to our point earlier, well, he's just what a Vince giant,
to do is like, you're super tall.
He's just like an extraordinarily well-branded like giant. A lumbering
guy who doesn't feel pain and doesn't sell anything, you know? And it's like, that's what he went with, is he's an undead zombie controlled by his little fag hag who's got the urn, you know? The urn, no, that's not urn, it's a yearn. It's a yearn, there you go. It's not an urn, it's a yearn. Writing that down. All right.
I can't believe that. Oh my god. It's true. I mean, as far as acts go, like it's hard to beat. Like the dynamic is so, and again, it's like the you know, you need the gaudy,
yeah. And that
the campy manager, if the person who has like very little.
He did kind of save it. I hate Cornette on commentary sometimes, but that's what I was starting to say. This one, he saved what was otherwise a cookie cutter match. That was, the cookie cutters were okay. You know, he's just having so much fun. He's fucking with Jerry Lawler, which always makes me happy. He's accusing Shawn Michaels of destroying Jean-Claude Van Damme's marriage. Like, yeah, eat my ass. I've always thought, like, do any of these celebrities ever call that. Them?
He's like, hey, he had something to do with it. I don't know.
Because, yeah, and Vince and all that, probably, no, you're not. You know, like, you're kayfabe like, too, aren't you? And because they think everyone's constantly lying. You know, as far as this match goes, yeah, watch it if you want, sickos. Yeah. I will say, it's cookie cutter. Like I said, one of Davey Boy's cookie cutters is the stalling vertical suplex, which is difficult to do when you're to a guy who's 7 foot tall, like Taker. I wrote down this as notable because he does it. He doesn't hold it for like 10 seconds like he usually does, but he does it. And that's impressive. So like, that's impressive enough to take note of. Otherwise, that was the main event. And I was just like, okay, as far as the match, whatever. Now, however, after the match, the end of the match, you mentioned Mankind fighting The Undertaker. This continues. At one point, Bulldog and them are out of the ring. Bulldog gets back in the ref starts counting. Taker tries to get back in, but Mankind reaches out from under the ring and holds his foot, and he loses by count out. What, maybe? Yeah, possibly. We don't know. Yeah, he could. He just keeps showing up. Like, this is, and I love this. This is why I wrote next. They do this because this gets huge heat. The crowd is pissed. They're like, what the fuck? And all the heels proceed to beat the shit out of Taker together. They take off. Mankind pile drives them and gets ready to do his foreplay finisher and shove his fingies in his mouth. And the refs stop him to close out the show, which is, I think, a great finish. Like you said, it ends on a total cliffhanger. You don't know if he's going to kill all these refs and keep going after him or what. But this is how they've been building him. It's really, really, really great. Because he keeps showing up and like fucking with Taker, getting in his head in a way that usually Taker does. You know what I mean? Like we talked about the pageantry, all that's there to get in people's heads. That's how they talk about it. And now you got this guy who is so fucking, like, you got Mick Foley, and it's like, we need you to be so fucking weird that people will cheer for the Undertaker like he's Luigi Mangione. This man was going to be a folk hero because you're so fucked up. Clearly Mick was confused because it's 1996 and that joke doesn't make sense yet, but I'm not deleting it from my notes. So there. But yeah, that's the end of that. And like, I don't know. My final thoughts on Raw is just to circle back to what you said. An hour is good. An hour is right. Yep.
Yeah, an hour where it feels like a literal cliffhanger. Exactly. Like, it stopped in a freeze frame. Like, it's like it feels like old school TV.
2.5 minute long vignettes. And that's where I'm going to give Nitro another bump, is they extended the time, but what they're filling it with isn't great. And even when they filled it with more wrestling this week, it was like five matches in a half hour. It was like, you know, a lot of, you know, that Regal Kidman match being 57 seconds long was a crime, Alex. Like that was a crime. Yeah.
Yeah, there aren't like sticky moments in those matches because it's going so fast, and there's doesn't necessarily feel like there are moments that like the next day.
Yeah,
like,
no, oh, so I don't know. I'm up like, in the air, you know. But I feel like I enjoyed Raw overall more this week, but I liked the graps a little more on Nitro, and that's very strange. That is very strange thing for me to say because normally Raw is a goddamn nightmare. Mm. But like I enjoyed this Raw, and that is fucked up. I don't like being made to enjoy a Vince McMahon product. Someone else.
No, this was on someone else. Yeah, anytime they hit, I'm like, well, it can't be Vince's responsibility.
That's awesome. But holy shit, we did it. We did it, Alex. You came on the.
Yeah. I'm so stoked. What a delight this has been. It was great revisiting and your commentary really is magical. Show
is to throw problematic 90s wrestling at a wide swath of people and see what it does to their brain and see what they have to say about it. Cause I learn more, you know? Nice.
I'll share with you. I'll send you links. I used to have a show called Nashville Demystified.
Yeah,
and part of that, I studied some of the history of the regional, like Memphis wrestling. And I have like
absolutely.
Please I have interviews more related to that from people who were there at the time and stuff. So I'll send that over to you. You
might find but it now, interesting.
Yeah. I was remembering with my mom the other day when we would watch, you know, she was like, oh, we used to watch, you know, when you were a kid, like little kid, like my dad and I and her, we would watch like the WWF. But then we were remembering that in Boston, and this was the case all over the place until cable took over everything. Yeah. You could get closed circuit wrestling matches from like the local gym. And like we would just watch like wrestling that was like streaming from some rec center down the street, which was wild.
Mostly, literally one from my general region.
And survived mostly
a backyard wrestler who I knew people went to school with, grew up and got on the Fed, is Hornswoggle, the little person who actually his character did live under the ring. He was a leprechaun. Yeah, and it was like I used to watch him at 2 a.m. like jump off of fences in my hometown. Like, you know, like that's very strange. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, and that's what, you know, that's in, you know, but that's what like Hood Slam was born out of, was like that thing. So yeah, I love it. It's I think it's the it best is, most like, problematic
wouldn't be the same clearest it,
picture and, of what our culture is, and it's important.
Our world wouldn't be the same without it, and it's something that's all over the world. Probably not. It who knows if that's for the good or the better, or the better or the worse.
Well, I mean, I was especially conscious of it again, having just, you know, and like at the end of the day, like a Ted Turner is a billionaire, quote, good guy capitalist. Like that's like just what he is or whatever. But just like thinking about that being like, it was like for a minute, it was like Ted Turner versus Vince McMahon and Vince McMahon.
And won, he did. And, right. And like, and, even better, he
and
did
you
it,
feel that in every fiber of your
3 months before 9/11. Yeah. See, and now like, you start to see how all of this, for some reason, really did help build the fucking hellscape that we are in now. Yeah.
It truly did. I mean, it is like in like non-conspiratorial thinking. It's like, it is the fabric of the culture we landed in. And you know, and it's like that.
Yeah,
and
exactly. Sort of like, there's like, people doing real creative
like what he
things.
Made. There
people
are all these really nuggets of good and interesting things that the evil has built.
It just so happens that the only game in town was run by the literal devil. You know, and you know, sometimes that happens. Oh my gosh.
Oh my god. Well, I would I would love it if you would come visit us on You Are Good at some point. It would be be so nice to have you.
I
am you.
Very excited for I haven't gotten a chance because I've been busy, but
we'll figure out a time and a title. I really
this episode will come out in a couple weeks, so this is dated. But y'all, I was unfortunately raised Catholic and that movie blew my little mind. Oh my god. I'm excited. So yes. Yeah, and on that note, folks, go check out You Are Good.
It was certainly a conversation people have been asking for years.
Check out You Are Good.
Go check out You Are Good. Check out the OC again, which we say of the hour and a half that we talk about, 15 minutes of it is about the OC. And then check out Siri Doll's new podcast, First Thirst, which is about people's first pop culture crushes. The first one came out last week. We had Crystal, the UK drag queen.
Go. And then go check
this
that out.
Week we have
go check out all the other things. I don't have to tell you about that. I have a whole laboratory sub-basement that takes care of my promotion for me. Y'all know what's up. So thank you for hanging out. Thank you, folks, for listening. We will see you next week for more Raw versus Nitro on Monday Night Fake Fights. Okay, bye.